when you start chasing things or start thinking about, oh, well, if I could get this here, then maybe I've got an easier chip onto the green. I think when you start getting ahead of yourself like that, then you lose focus with actually what you need to do in that moment.
Let's go! And welcome back. Welcome aboard another Park Train. I'm one of your co-hosts, Evan Singer. We've got my partner in crime, Mr. Matt Cermak, with me.
What's up, Ev? Good to be back.
We just had an awesome ride with Aaron Hyde, the goalkeeper coach of the U.S. men's national soccer team, as well as Charlotte FC. So yep. Our first guest in the soccer world. I thought it was really interesting. We're going to get to it in a second. But first, guys, if you're new, welcome aboard. If you ride this train often, also welcome aboard. If your golf game's off the rails, if you're sick of riding the struggle bus, you've come to the right place. We help the frustrated golfers enjoy the ride again, because if you can learn to smile through bad golf, you can smile through anything. The Par Train unpacks the mental game with PGA Tour pros, best-selling authors, sports psychologists, everyday golfers like you and me, goalkeeper coaches for the men's national team, soccer, you name it, we do it, and more to make the hardest game in the world feel easy and help you finally get back on track. This episode of the Par Train is presented by our friends at Roback Activewear. I hope you guys took advantage of all the Masters stuff that came out. Now we're a couple weeks post the Masters by the time you listen to this, but good news, Roback is always releasing new spring, fall styles, no matter when you're listening to this. So Roback.com, enter the code TRAIN, get yourself 15% off. If the code doesn't work, it means you've probably bought with them before. So read between the lines, do what you need to do.
Get ready for Cinco de Mayo and Derby, you know, because they're going to have some prints out.
So. They just dropped this new old school baseball print polo where it's like
opening day, you know.
Yeah, opening day is here.
We recorded this March 30th in Chicago. Come on, guys.
True. So if you guys forget the code, just go to our Instagram at the Par Train, tap the link in the bio. We'll always have a Roback link there that'll auto apply in your cart. So thank you to Roback as always for the support. And thank you guys for all the messages about how much you love your Roback gear. It really is the best, stretchiest, best polos and hoodies and Q-zips, vests, joggers, you name it. They got it all. And they really are an amazing group of people building this thing from the ground up. So we always get excited to get your messages. Keep sending them. And thank you to Roback. Okay. Aaron Hyde, like I said, U.S. men's national soccer goalkeeper coach, as well as Charlotte FC, was previously with the Chicago Fire. And I thought this was really interesting because, look, we know we've done baseball. We've done a couple professional baseball players and former World Series MVPs, if you remember that, of the St. Louis Cardinals, Mark Mulder and David Fries. And I love these episodes because I love drawing parallels with golf. A goalie is obviously reactionary, right? But guess what? The goalie has a ton of time to think in between stops. And I really loved the PK discussion as well, of like really breaking down how does a goalie mentally prepare for a PK, a thing that is statistically in his opponent's favor, right?
Oh, absolutely.
We related that to golf.
The goalie is one of the most, what's the word, Av? It's like the most watched positions in sports, right? We think about the goalies. We think about a kicker in the NFL. We think about a pitcher in baseball, these individual positions on team sports. But we certainly know and feel that that connects back to golf being the ultimate individual sport. I loved it. I loved what he talks a lot about how he communicates, how he coaches goalies. I mean, managing their emotions, their expectations. You know, we do a lot of parallels with, you know, having a short-term memory, like hitting a bad shot in golf, how to come back, how to react, get into some data talk too, which is fun. And that's really around commitment, which I think was really fascinating.
Yeah.
So just a great conversation. Like you said, Ev, these are really fun ones for us. We love talking to those non-golfers, but he's a golfer too. So, and he really like any of us, like all of us humbled by the game, right? And about what it takes to be good at golf and have an appreciate routine, understanding course management. Fantastic conversation.
Yeah. And one thing to keep in mind, guys, is this happens sometimes when our guests have, you know, a certain headphone in, sometimes the voice can go in and out. It can be a little bit muffled. So we're going to do the best we can with the edit, but just stick with us, maybe turn it up a little bit. Maybe it'll promote listening even closer. The interview will impact you even more. So keep that in mind. Stay with us to the end because That's when we'll talk about the U.S. men's national team stuff, which I thought was just so fascinating to hear from someone inside that locker room and how they build the culture and the mindset of being the USA in the World Cup. Just such a unique, amazing access to that.
What an inside look.
Yeah. So thank you guys, as always, for hopping aboard. If this interview or any interview adds value to you, all we really ask is to leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or Spotify and give us a follow at The Partrain, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. We're posting there every single day, stuff that's not on the show to keep you on track and help you enjoy the ride. So, sir, no matter how many easy goals you let in playing soccer, or how many balls you hit OB, or how many times you don't stay present and you get in your own way, what do they got to do, sir?
Just enjoy the ride.
Enjoy the ride, guys. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Aaron Hyde, welcome aboard the Partrain, my man. We're excited to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Excited to be on.
Our first goalkeeper coach that we've ever had. First, actually, I think, Serm, keep me honest, first guest that has been in the game of soccer. And Serm and I are excited because some of our favorite episodes, Aaron, have been other sports, other disciplines, and finding the parallels between the two. We've had baseball players, we've had many other athletes, and we're excited to dig into soccer. But first, Aaron, I got to ask you selfishly, I'm from St. Louis originally, and there's a ton of buzz right now about St. Louis FC. I wanted to see, is Charlotte FC, where you coach, are you guys starting to feel the buzz from St. Louis all the way in Charlotte? Or are you starting to shake in your boots because of the buzz of this new franchise?
I mean, it's ironic that you bring that up because obviously we opened up that stadium and gifted them a victory. pretty incredible things that are going on down there at the minute. I mean, you know, fair play to them. They've set everything up properly. They've come in with a vision of how they want to do things. And so far, they've played 5 and 1-5. So it's, you could say it's going pretty good.
It's got to be pretty rare for a new franchise. I was thinking of other sports. It's pretty rare for a new franchise to come in and start doing well. I guess the Vegas Golden Knights in hockey, I guess, are an example of that. But other than that, with the NFL, that wasn't usually the case. New franchises would kind of come in and struggle.
Yeah, I think, you know, I was in Atlanta when they started in 2017, and we won it the next year. We won an MLS Cup in 2018. The first year definitely was some ups and downs, and we thought it was overall, it was a pretty good year, all things considering. To win 5 games in a row was just insane. So, fair play to them. Fortunately, they're not in our conference, so they can keep doing it if they want. Yeah,
totally. We're going to give our listeners, I think, foundational knowledge and just kind of build the base of what goes into being a goalkeeper and such. But first, I wanted to ask just more high level, big picture. Obviously, a soccer goalie is inherently playing defense. Obviously, they're trying to stop the attack from the other team. But Aaron, is there an aspect of the best goalies having to have an offensive mindset, if that makes sense, where you almost have to attack the task? Because in golf, defensive is not a good thing. So maybe talk about the balance there of being a defensive player, but still needing to have an offensive mindset.
So I think for me, the biggest thing with goalkeeping is the primary objective is to keep the ball out the back of the net. The position has evolved so much in the last 10, 15 years where, like you say, there's more of a push towards being proactive. So that obviously means being more on the front foot and not just waiting for the game to come to you. But then with rule changes that came into play 20 years ago and not being able to pick up back passes, you have to be able to use your feet. So there is this offensive element which has become very, very strong. And, you know, one of the biggest coaches in soccer in the world, Pep Guardiola, has kind of revolutionized the position in terms of having the goalkeeper and using them as an extra outfield player. So there is definitely this huge shift in thought process and the psyche of a goalkeeper, not just to be this stand on the line and reactive and have to be a little bit more proactive and have to be braver and have to be prepared to participate in the game a lot more.
That's good. And Aaron, again, welcome to the show. I wanted to read a quote for you by Pat Jennings, former Northern Ireland goalkeeper from years and years ago. So he said, "The game is easy. It's when you get in front of big crowds, it's something at stake, like winning the match. That's when the mental side comes in." I think we see that a lot with golf. We see that with a lot of sports, but a golfer has a lot of time in between good shots and bad shots. And so does a goalkeeper. And then obviously into penalty kicks and things. But as it relates to the mental side, you know, how are you working, you know, with your goalkeepers and on that side of the development?
It's a great point. I think obviously the first important thing is to get to know them on a personal level. You're working with the person first, and that's always important. And then from there, I think it's about developing a framework that works for them. You think about how you approach training, how you can approach games. And I think for me, it's always about trying to put those two together. Within that framework, I think for me, some of the key things that will always stick out, and I think these some of the things I've heard from your podcast in the previous episodes, are just about staying in the moment, being present. And I think that's so true for particularly a position that I sort of really focus on, goalkeeping. You can't control on what's going to happen. You don't know. So the only thing that matters is the now, and being able to respond in the right way to what is going to happen, I think is really important. So, you know, when you think about what you said in terms of that question and putting people in the stands and putting something on the line, if you're worried about that stuff and the outcome, then the processes that you're working on every day in training, they become irrelevant because you're going to get lost up in everything else rather than focusing on what's got you there, got you to where you are and staying on task.
Evan and I have talked about a lot with each other and with different guests. One of the great ways to be in the present, to stay focused on the golf course, is to really just be one with your pre-shot routine. Like, that's what you can control as a golfer, right? You know, and just sticking to your routine, and that kind of helps calm your thoughts, block out your thoughts a little bit that you might be thinking about results or trying to hit a great shot. I don't know if you would use pre-shot routine for a goalie, but talk about that or what a goalie can lean on, especially after, you know, letting in an easy goal or going against a team that, you know, is, you know, better. Just what's a routine they can stick to?
I think in terms of, you know, in the way that I work, I think that the routine, we recap the game and we think about, you know, the good moments and the opportunities of where we could maybe look at things a little bit differently. And then from there, we start to move forward, really. We start to think about what the opponent's going to present to us and the threats, just to make the players aware, opportunities for us to hurt them. And then also continue to work on the things that we know are each individual needs, so that they continue to move forward themselves. And I think from that standpoint of that routine and the consistency and that not really changing too much, that when you get to the game, you know, between on the field and in video meetings, you should be able to prep the players well enough to know what the challenge is. And then from there, obviously, it's always, I think for me, it's always about presenting them with an opportunity to do something well. And it's never about, or, you know, it's a tough game or this is a tough environment. Because I think if you talk about that stuff, it can start to weigh a little bit regardless. I think, I mean, it's just human nature to think of the negative thoughts first. So for me, it's always about thinking about the opportunities of what could be.
Help our listeners gain a little foundational knowledge. Because I even played soccer in high school and I still don't really even know in regards to, like, help me break down different goalkeeper styles. Like, to me, I think when someone thinks of a goalie, you think of lanky, ability to jump, agile, and basically, do they stop goals or do they not? Right? Where it's golf, there's a lot more, it's more obvious. I think you've got power players, you've got more finesse, you've got great around the greens, you've got great approach players. What separates goalies and what are the different styles that you have to work with? Within as a coach,
in terms of styles, I think the way I look at it is that there's not one right way or wrong. You know, there's not a right or wrong way to do something in terms of the position and being successful. It's about finding what works best for the individual, and then from there, making sure that you're able to continuously work on those things so that they can be successful. There's a lot of obviously high-level players and there's a lot of competition. You think of the top nations in the world, the Germanys, Brazils, Argentinas, Englands. They all have high-level players and they all have different makeups. You know, and they all go about how they achieve that objective differently. So, you know, some of the things you touched on there, you know, the speed, the power, the size. Maybe one person's better as a shot stopper. Maybe one's better in possession, you know, distribution. And then it's about understanding what that player has and then knowing maybe what you would want to try and add versus how that may work within the team's structure and game model. because that'll always be important. There's no point wanting your goalkeeper to come and claim loads of crosses if they're 5'7". You know, professional game where most, you know, a lot of players are 6 foot, you're maybe asking something that's maybe a little bit unrealistic for that player. So piecing all those things together, I think, is really important.
How much of your work with the goalkeepers on obviously the U.S. men's national team, as well as Charlotte and Atlanta previously, is mental versus physical? And on the physical side, what are you working on technically with a goalkeeper?
If I'm honest, I think that it's been in the last probably 3 or 4 years, been the biggest eye-opener to me in terms of something I've had to invest is to learn more about this mental side of the game and think about the language I use, how I'm saying something, when I'm saying something. I think I've probably dismissed it a little bit before of just the old school nature of, well, basically on the player and they need to figure that part out. You know, I think that side of things is so important these days in terms of players being able to manage themselves, manage their emotions, put things into context. So I would definitely say I've made a conscious effort in the last 3 or 4 years to really work at that.
Can you give an example of something you might have said previously that you say differently now in the last 3 years?
Maybe not necessarily said differently. I think some of the things I think I've thought about in recent years would be, I think more would be along the lines of being honest in conversations. I had a conversation with a player last summer, 2 summers ago now with the national team when he was disappointed he wasn't playing in the tournament. And I basically said, another player has outperformed him. And he took that to heart and really took that away from him. Took that away from the tournament. We ended up winning the Gold Cup that year. And when I sent him a message saying congratulations, wrote a nice note in terms of appreciate the work, the conversations that we had had. And you know, something I always like to talk about with players a lot is, or frame to them is, what do they look like when they're at their best? Think about their best games, their best moments, and think about how they can then give me sort of action-based words that could highlight those positive moments. So it's not just a conversation, but it's something then that I can use, and I can listen to the words and the language that they use to then help them try and develop some sort of framework from which they can always revert back to. Because I think that's something that tends to happen a lot and I'm guessing it happens with every sport. They will have a certain thing and they'll find a groove and, you know, maybe you have a little bit of form, but then there's this, all of a sudden, those negative thoughts always be there and creep back in, and players not being able to find a way in which they can recenter themselves and go back, so having something to go back to get themselves back on task.
Aaron, I want to maybe expand on what you said regarding what does it look like when you're at your best? Oftentimes, me like growing up playing, you know, and being a lesson with my coach, and we'd be working on something, and then I'd hit this great shot. He would say, well, "What did that feel like?" Right? Because I couldn't see it, right? But what did it feel like? And more often than not, it's like it just felt tension free, it felt loose, and it felt like I could be aggressive. And it's hard to describe, right? But I would imagine that's similar. When you have those conversations, when you're putting in the work with your goalkeepers, I mean, it's very instinctual what a goalkeeper has to do. They have to make a prediction. But I think golfers at their best are generally just instinctual and just make, you know, hit the shot instead of making a swing.
For sure. Yeah, exactly what you say there. I think for anyone, right, you're at your best when you know what you have to do and you think less about it and go and just execute. And it's usually the thoughts in your own mind about, well, I need to put it here, or it's a 80 yard shot and the wind's blowing in my face. So how hard do I really need a swing? And I think it's the same in my world in terms of getting the players to focus on the right information, remove information which they don't need.
Right. And that gets you away from too much information. Yeah, golf exactly. Can be an absolute killer, wanting to know everything.
Yes. So I think that's something that I like to talk to as well to my players, because sometimes they'll be like, well, it could have been this and it was this and I thought about this. And I'm like, well, you probably should just take away some of that then. So that you've got less to think about. Yeah.
What you're saying, Aaron, is it's no different than golf and soccer, with the best athletes in the league. goalkeepers in this case, it sounds like stripping away things usually have to strip away more than adding on, I think is what you're saying as a coach.
Yeah, for sure. At times, I think there's times when you are going to be, you're going to add a ton of layers and you're going to throw a ton of information at someone, but there are moments when you have to just back off. I think that is probably the nuances of coaching, of knowing your own players, knowing the group. And I think that's where, you know, when we talked about at the beginning, you have to know them individually. You have to know them on a more of a personal level to know when to push things and maybe when not to. Because I think if you just go one way or the other too much, it can be difficult to be successful.
I know we're going to get to men's national team in a second. We're going to get to your golf game. And I heard you actually use golf with your players as a tool. So we'll definitely get to that if that's true. But first, I think everybody probably wants to know, because I'm itching to ask it, so I assume our listeners probably are too. Let's talk about PKs for a second. Because this is obviously the spotlight of being a goalkeeper, right? And a lot of times as a goalkeeper, at least from the outside looking in, it's a guess. Talk about the mindset of being a goalkeeper in PKs and what you guys work on and what a goalie is thinking in this moment. What can they root themselves in for this moment?
I think for me, whenever I talk about it, it's just a great opportunity to make a play and help your team. Most penalties should be scored. The probability of them being saved is pretty low if it's well taken. However, I think with that, there's a ton of information you can get out there, and there's a lot of things you can do in terms of studying the taker. Before we played the Netherlands in the knockout game, we spent 2 days going through the whole team. That's how long it took. My idea was always we obviously have three goalkeepers and myself, and we would sit there and I would always let the player that was going to play sort of lead it. But it was more of a discussion to see if anybody picks something up. We make a decision and we basically go with that.
Is it safe to say in a penalty kick situation, you want your goalkeeper to commit to the prediction, right? To the tendency of the taker. Is that at the end of the day, that's what you need to do?
Yeah, I mean, I've worked with players in the past where they don't want to look at anything. They just want to make their own decision in the moment. And if that's they feel that strongly, then for me, then I'll, you know, unless they dive the wrong way every single time for a series of penalties, then I probably wouldn't intervene. But more recently, I think obviously with the amount of information that's now available.
And the data, yeah.
I think it would be, you'd be doing yourself a disservice if you didn't analyze a player and look at, you know, if they've taken 15 penalties, look at them all and see, I'm trying to find some context as to why they went where, maybe what's their preference, or is there a pattern in what they're doing?
Guys, I want to take a second to reflect on one piece of equipment that we all play, the golf ball. Now, I don't know if you're one of those people that's always played a Pro V or you switch around and whatever, but one thing that's kind of blown me away is I think I play a golf ball that not enough people know about. And just to be perfectly clear, I've been playing this golf ball for years before they started partnering with us. Years. That's actually why this partnership happened, is because I reached out to TaylorMade and I said, hey, more people need to know about the Tour Response golf ball. I think we could do something together. I think we could help our listeners out. And so here's my little tip to you. The Tour Response golf balls are $42.99. The TP5X are $50, right? So you might say, yeah, it's only $8, whatever. Hey, savings is savings. And I have pretty much always played better with the Tour Response golf ball than the TP5. So the way that I like to judge my golf ball is on approach shots, does it stop where I hit it? So if I have 145 in, is my golf ball right next to my ball mark, or did it spin back 10 feet, right? Or did it jump forward? I like when the ball stops exactly where I hit it, because to me, that's what distance control is all about. I know the ball is going to go the distance that I'm planning if I hit it solid, right? And the Tour Response is the ball that I've played forever. And that's what the Tour Response does for me. So whether you play a TP5, Pro V1, I highly recommend play the Tour Response ball. The Tour Response stripe is actually their most popular ball. I didn't know how it would do because it's got a big stripe across the middle, but it's actually like really, really nice to putt with. You can see if you can keep the stripe straight. It's actually great to practice with too. So go to TaylorMadeGolf.com. I'll put the links in our show notes and our link in our bio at the Par Train on Instagram. But get yourself some Tour Response balls, or they've got a buy three dozen get one free promo right now for TP5X. If you do want the tour level ball and want to pay a little bit more, they've got that promo going as well. So DM us on Instagram. Let us know what ball you play. Let's get the golf ball conversation going, and let's get you guys back on track. Thanks, guys. I love how you said you've accepted that the data says most penalty kicks are going to go in, right? And so it's almost like it's kind of like an underdog. Here's an opportunity to be the outlier. Here's an opportunity to make a play. I find that freeing. I think that's a good analogy, Serm, in golf of like, I think golf's all about percentages too. You hear the best players in the world and the best coaches talk about, look, it's an arguably the hardest game in the world. It's just sitting there. The ball's just sitting there, but the ball can go like this, right? And we have all the time in the world to think about it. So giving yourself the best opportunity to make a good, aggressive, committed swing to the widest parts of the fairway, the widest parts of the green, even though we know the percentages are against us as a whole, it's a hard game. We have an opportunity. This is our best opportunity to make a play. And I think that's kind of what I took from what you said. I think that's a really cool way to think about it. It's an offensive opportunity, even though the odds are stacked against you. What percentage of goalies already know what they're going to do based on the research and what they know about the player versus how many goalies are instinctual in the moment based on a move or the first step of the kicker?
I think more you work with now, more than goalkeepers in the current era are going to be more research-based. They're going to look at the penalties. They're going to have look for certain cues to maybe influence the decision. They may have experience of playing on the same national team together, so they've maybe got an idea that what they would like to do to be able to pick up on things if they were to, you know, face them again, maybe change, and maybe they want to change where they're going. I think for the goalkeeper, it's the older goalkeeper, I think, is probably with maybe a little bit more instinctual, probably less information, or it was less of a thing. So I just think maybe as the times have changed, that's where you've seen that shift.
And this is happening in the golf, in the professional golf world too, and at high level and amateur. It's relying on data to tell the story and to influence how you play a course. Even when you think you shouldn't hit driver, the data says you should.
Yeah.
And it's really changing modern sports.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I think the more obviously the generation that's coming in now, they're more in tune with technology. So they're more inclined to use it and be able to apply it in the right way.
Aaron, what do you think it is about soccer where you can have best players in the world be 16, 15, 17? Like I forget his name. There's a kid playing on St. Louis FC, playing still in high school. High school, right. I know,
yeah,
20 minutes, you know, from where I grew up. What is it about soccer or football internationally that, I guess, what can we learn from these athletes that can be so successful so young mentally?
Yeah, that's an interesting one from the mental standpoint. I think it's a young person's game. If you can't run, the game will pass you by, or you end up obviously not being maybe in the top leagues, or you don't play every week.
So that's why I couldn't make
it. I think... And then I think, you know, as you get older, you become a little bit more set in your ways and you are who you are. And I think one thing that soccer doesn't stop, it just keeps going and it's consistently evolving and people are always trying to change or come up with different ideas or pull something from a long time ago, which obviously changed the style or, you know, kind of where the game is. I think you need flexible and adaptable people. And I think maybe the younger you are, the more willing and open-minded you are versus... And the easier maybe it is to apply new things and to be able to pick them up. there's those sort of dynamics that are constantly going in the background. But I think fundamentally, you have to be able to run.
And speaking of that, Aaron, one of the maybe the best compliment we've ever received on this show is we were called, we've got a couple messages. We were called the Ted Lasso of golf because
that's great.
The golf world can be inherently very negative because it's the most self-deprecating game out there, right? It's you're never safe from golf. You could hit the greatest shot of your life and then hit the worst shot of your life 5 minutes later. I'm just curious, you're around some of the best players in the world, especially in the men's national team. Are these players, are they into Ted Lasso? Do they like it? Does it come off authentic? Do they enjoy it? Or is it not as much of a, I mean, obviously there's a lot of satire and stuff there for entertainment purposes, but do soccer players like the show?
I personally do. I think it gets mixed reviews. I actually met Coach Beard and stuff, so they seem great guys. I think the show has, you know, like you say, it's got a good storyline. Don't take it too serious. I think the interesting thing that's happened in the recent times is we've had American coaches go to England and be in the Premier League. And there's been this instant parallel of them being called Coach Lasso.
Oh, really?
Aaron, I mean, I want to, and Ev, if you got anything else, but we want to dig into your game, your golf game, too. You know, we love hearing about your handicap, how long you've been playing, what you're working on, some learnings, you know, and we love diving into our guest games.
And also how you use it as a coaching tool as
yeah,
well.
Certainly the parallels.
The biggest thing for me with really getting into playing golf consistently was COVID and just being obviously not really able to do anything else and just the enjoyment and the ability to, you know, sort of still do sport because obviously I wasn't really doing much work. You know, on the field stuff, we weren't. Soccer was kind of, you know, shut down for a while. So playing golf was a sort of, for me, like the next best way to even just compete in my own mind. But obviously continue to enjoy it and trying to chip away and get better at it for sure. So, you know, it's interesting. It was something that my wife encouraged me to do was whenever I come back from camp was to go play the next day just because it gave me a chance maybe to come from all the way up here, you know, sort of this intense high period of work to normal everyday life
get your mind
wife
off,
and kids working at a different level of intensity. It was sort of a good de-stressor for me from that standpoint.
That's how you know you got a keeper, you know, pun intended.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's funny. My dad, he loved to hit balls on the driving range. He would like to actually hit balls more than he loved to play. But he always feel like, what, Pat, why do you hit so many balls? Why do you love it? He just says, it's just kind of that's my de-stressor. It's my therapy. You know, like it's just forget about, you know, it's just and the ability, the opportunity to work on something too, you know, that's
right, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So Aaron, we heard you use golf with your goalkeepers as a way to work on various mental things. Is that true?
I know a bunch of the guys that I've worked with, they play golf. And whenever there's a day off, they're always off playing golf. There's a bunch of guys, actually, they're all pretty good. Always good to hear the stories about who took money off who. But, you know, it's a hugely popular sport within soccer, you know, football. I would say a large percentage of guys play golf. You know, usually you get one day off a week. Most guys would probably play golf on their day off.
That's Why cool. do you think that is?
For the most part, compete. With most professional athletes, a chance to compete, whether it's with friends or themselves. You know, obviously, most usually have good hand-eye coordination, so have a decent foundation to begin with. And it's usually they're the ones that I feel that can pick it up pretty easy as well, in terms of just their how fast they can improve.
Aaron, where have you seen improvement in your game these last couple of years? What would you consider a strength?
I would say I wouldn't necessarily have any strengths, but I think just being more consistent with how I'm actually hitting the golf ball. I think, you know, you look at things, you watch things. Obviously, there's more to it than just watching maybe videos and listening to tips from people. To find what works for you, So I think being more consistent with what I'm doing, I think, like you say, pre-shot routine, trying to focus and get away from thinking, oh, the green is there, I gotta go for it. How I'm swinging the club and making contact with the ball is always important, I think, to me. Otherwise, I think it can become a very difficult round.
It sounds like just course management, starting to understand that, how to play the hole. Like, I've got options.
Is there anything you've learned as you've progressed as a golfer yourself where you're like, oh yeah, this, I can talk about this with my players, or this could make me a better coach? Is there anything that's helped elevate you as a coach in soccer?
I think the thing about golf is patience for me, is that when you try and speed up playing, when you try and swing too hard, or you try and overthink about what you're trying to do. And I think there's definitely parallels there with the way I view soccer and the goalkeeper position. The goal's behind you. The game is coming to you. If you chase it too much, it'll get you. So it's a question of understanding and accepting that, and then being able to. And I think that's the same for me a little bit when I think about golf and standing there. And it's not about how hard you can swing. It's not about how far you can hit it. It's about just the consistency of, in that moment, being consistent with how you're approaching the ball, how you're swinging, the timing, and the contact.
What you just said made me think of my 8-year-old nephew, where I went to his soccer championship, which was so intense. I'd never thought an 8-year-old soccer championship would be this intense, but parents were screaming, yelling. His team was getting beat down, but my nephew was the goalie. And this kid, Connor, would be sprinting out 30 yards, just taking people out, not letting the ball come to him. He was their only chance to win. They actually got hurt, had to leave the game, and they lost. But that's one way to play goalie. It was actually quite inspiring to watch.
That's amazing. That's great. Yeah.
Have you ever been a part of a sport where you can hear so many different ways to do something? Like, God, just golf instruction on, you know, all the Instagram videos. It's not the,
yeah, for sure. It's incredible.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I mean, when I've had lessons before, I've had lessons off a couple of different people. They're completely opposite. And the second person I went to, I thought, you know, I was doing what I'd been previously told. And they worked at the same golf course. And he's like, no, he's like, what are you doing? That's a disaster.
Yeah.
Right. And obviously, like, then they try and change into sort of their style. And yeah, for sure. I think obviously there's always a lot of ways to skin the cat, of course. You know, I think that's always the beauty about any sport, right? It's just finding what works for you. The way you play probably might not work for me or for Evan, you know. I think that's always the interesting part about it.
All right, guys, stay seated. This train's going to make a quick pit stop. Keep those seatbelts fast, and then we'll get the train right back on track. I've got something for you guys that I think you're going to absolutely love. I don't know about you. I've been talking to different friends, and I realized it's pretty rare for people to have a go-to golf shoe. People have go-to equipment brands for their putters, their irons, their wedges, drivers, etc. But golf shoes, you kind of jump around a little bit. And I've been looking for a brand that I can stick with. And I was honestly a little bit surprised when I realized it and I tried it on. But now I'll never go back. Olakai golf shoes. They call it Aloha Golf. It's all about same thing, enjoying the ride, Aloha Golf, staying chill, staying happy, enjoying it all. But more importantly, it's the most comfortable golf shoe I've ever worn. So you guys might know Olakai for the sandals and their regular footwear. And everybody, you know, I've got like the flattest feet in the world. I could never find sandals that fit my foot. The only sandal that's ever fit my foot are Olakai flip-flops. So I'm seeing so many people that wear Olakai for everyday stuff. When they hear they had a golf shoe, they ran straight to olakai.com and got themselves these pairs. I personally love the white leather shoe. It's super classic. They've got gray, brown, etc. And they've also got these other styles that are kind of cool and unique. There's some brown leather mixed into some navy canvas, and it's a little bit more eclectic and kind of a trail outdoor feel. And it's pretty cool. I have those too. And the heel, best part, the heel on all their golf shoes flap down just like the regular footwear. Go to our show notes of this episode or go to our Instagram account at the Partrain. Tap the link in bio. You'll see an Olakai link in there. Tap that link, because if you click that link, you will get free shipping on your order. Highly recommend this, guys. Remember, I tested them back in April and walked 36 holes at Bandon Dunes without breaking them in, and I had zero blisters. I've had shoes that are broken in that I've worn for months that gave me blisters at Bandon Dunes. These didn't. So tap that link in our show notes of this episode or go to our bio at The Par Train and get yourself the most comfortable golf shoes I've ever worn. All right, let's get back to the show. Aaron, have you ever worked, and obviously you don't have to say names, but just generally, have you ever worked with a goalie that did hit rock bottom, lost all their confidence, felt like they couldn't save anything? And if so, or even encountered that yourself, how did you guys work through that, if so?
I think when you think about loss of confidence, it's always like trying to get back to the basics and restoring the confidence in those parts of the game. Because, you know, I think Kobe that said you should never get bored with the basics. Him or Jordan said that one time.
I like that.
And there's just so much truth to that. The basics are the things you work. Obviously, the fundamentals that you're working on every day. I think so that, you know, the first part for me would be to establish those again. And sometimes, you know, the unfortunate part when you think about that, you know, that which is maybe time off the field in terms of, you know, you don't play for a week or 2 weeks or something, you know, you lose your place. And now all of a sudden you've got to, so you can give a clean break to them from a mental standpoint. Okay, let's remove you from this. And then from there, let's build you back up again. I think, you know, start with the basics and then you can start to move along, and then maybe there's an opportunity to bring them back into the game. If you don't have that situation, I think it's important again to keep reminding them about the things that they do when they're at the best. What is it that you would do there? What is it? And think about what where you're at currently, and try and get them to revert back to where they were, predisposing their mindset to, in order for me to do my job, I need to do this. In order for me to execute, I need to do this, rather than thinking, oh, this is going to happen, or this is going to happen. This guy's not doing his job, or they're not doing their job. This guy missed the tackle. And I think when you start to go down that route, you know, and it maybe is the same in golf in terms of if you're, you know, either somebody's chasing you or you're chasing someone that, oh, they've just hit a good shot. Now I got to hit a good shot. You know, I make par, or, you know, whatever it might be from that standpoint, is that I think you chase those moments. It can be difficult.
You know, one thing, Serm, that I've realized.
It's hard to deal with all that. Yeah.
After almost 240 podcasts with some of the best players and coaches in the world, I've realized that everyday golfers, I think we make a wrong assumption that we think the best players focus on the basics because they have the basic fundamentals down. Like, they already got the swing figured out. So they just hammer home the basics as like maintenance. But then you hear this across all sports, like your point with Kobe and the best soccer players in the world. It seems like the best athletes focus on the basics, whereas the amateurs try to reinvent and change things in motion and positional stuff. And I got to get here, you know, versus just working on, you know, posture, alignment, grip, tempo.
It's putting in the time to the non-sexy stuff.
Yeah, but would you say that's true for your athletes too? Is they put in the time for the non-sexy stuff?
Yeah, 100%. I think it's important that, you know, as a coach, that you're giving them those moments. You can't go out on the golf course trying to practice on your swing, can you? I would say I'm not going to try and practice something different within my setup. Because that's going to lead potentially, it's more often than not, is going to lead to being a very difficult round.
Right. So let me ask you this, Aaron. We didn't really get to talk about the national team. I'm just curious, from a mental standpoint, you got to watch firsthand a team representing a country that historically it's the underdog. You know, the country kind of turns on soccer once every 4 years, it seems like, for the national team. What is the mindset of that room? I know this group from this past World Cup was really young. I think it was one of our youngest teams ever, keep me honest. What was the mindset of that group of being the underdog? What can the average athlete take away from that team dynamic that they saw so much success with?
The one thing we talked about a lot and stressed was just the collective. You know, it's no one individual that's going to win a game. And to win the World Cup, you have to beat the person that's in front of you on that day. You don't have to do anything else. And, you know, we just try to relay that message that, you know, every time we encounter these, every time we encounter the next opponent is we just have to be better than them on that day. It's not to say that we're better than them, but on that day, we were better. We tried to take that approach to into the games in terms of how we managed everyone, because obviously they all had different. You think of the group games, you play England. There is a little bit of a rivalry that's been there in the World Cup, because in fact, South Africa, obviously US played. We're in the same group, and obviously ended up tying the game. England's never beat the US in a competitive World Cup match. But, you know, so there was all these, you know, and you know, obviously the history, and then obviously you play Iran, and obviously all the dynamics that were going on at the time. A lot of these guys probably didn't have any context to the geopolitical side of, you know, you need to beat Iran. and that being really important. So I think, you know, the one thing when you're at the World Cup, you are sort of in this bubble, completely insulated from. Really, I mean, if you don't want to know about anything that's going on the outside, you can make that happen, which I think obviously is a good thing and helps a lot. And Greg, the head coach, did a great job.
I think
for the games.
The cool thing about that that I love, Aaron, is I think it's really easy in the World Cup and obviously golf too to get ahead of ourselves. You see this mountain that you have to climb, and you have to think to yourself, oh man, I'm like, we've never done it before. How are we going to beat someone like England, France, Brazil, Italy, all like, how are we going to beat someone like that? Right. But that's getting ahead of yourself. I think brooding yourselves in the moment of all I have to do is be better than this team today. Just like in golf, all I have to do is give this shot the best chance, my best effort. And then at the end of the round, let's see where my score stacks up. I think it's actually a very similar strategy that the coaching staff did with the men's national team.
Yeah, I agree with it. But we always talk about sort of, you know, with the journey with the national team, it is about a mountain and you are consistently climbing, but it's not like you climb the mountain and then that's it. You've done it. There's another peak that's coming. There's another opponent that's going to come. Yeah, we constantly worked and moved along as the time went by, as thinking about how we were constantly climbing, because we were climbing to get to, always thinking about the end objective was obviously the World Cup at the end of last year, but there was obviously a lot of steps to get there along the way.
Well, it's pretty cool that you've had the opportunity to be in all these national and international environments at the highest level. And look forward to, I know you were at the Fire a long time ago too, Chicago Fire.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, it's with the Fire. That's correct. Yeah.
We'll have to try and come see you at one of the games in the MLS. It'll be fun.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Yeah, we're playing Chicago later in the year, actually.
Yeah, I can't wait to go home and see STLFC match in the new stadium. I know St. Louis has a ton of roots with the game of soccer. A lot of men's national team players come from St. Louis. And
that's right, yeah,
I can feel the buzz from the city. So I can't wait to go home and go to a game and wear a scarf when it's warm out, because, you know, that's just what you do.
That's what you do. Yeah, they've done a fantastic job. They really have. Tip your hat to them.
Well, Aaron, thank you for hopping aboard. Anything that we've talked about that you want to reiterate or hit home for the average golfer out there or aspiring soccer player, or something that maybe we didn't get to talk about that you want to make sure you say before we hop off the train here?
Yeah, I just think the things for me that I think are really important with working with high-level athletes, and I think it just trickles down to life in general, is just, you know, staying in the moment, staying present. I think that stuff is so important in terms of being able to focus and center yourself to think about what you're doing and know what is important in that moment to be able to execute to the best of your ability. Because when you start chasing things or start thinking about, oh, well, if I could get this here, and then maybe I've got an easier chip onto the green. I think when you start getting ahead of yourself like that, then you lose focus with actually what you need to do in that moment. Or if you get caught hung up on a previous shot, it can easily help you spiral. And, you know, being able to just focus on the present, I think, is so important. I wish I could do it a little bit more in my own golf game. It's something I continue to work on as well.
It's what we're always going to be working on. And I think that's a great way to kind of sum it up.
Yeah. Love it. Well, where can people find you, Aaron, if they want to learn more about you?
Twitter at AZZAH13 on Twitter. And Azza is my nickname. And then same on Instagram as well. So.
Okay, sweet. I just gave you a follow on Twitter there. Well, Aaron, this was a real fun ride. Thank you so much for hopping aboard. We'll be rooting for you throughout the season. Hopefully future World Cups to come. So thanks again for hopping aboard. And I think a lot of people will find this super helpful and interesting.
Yeah, great to meet you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Really appreciate it.
Hey, guys, this is Evan. Real quick, before you hop off the train, I got something for you. It's called The Train of Thought. It's our new email newsletter. Would you like to get one nugget, insight, or thought that we're pondering every week that could help keep you sharp and help your mental game? Go to thepartrain.com and subscribe to the Train of Thought newsletter today. It's really the best way to enjoy the ride. See you guys.